The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland, live from Barcanada. Here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Kelly furiously typing over there. What's your story over there? Are you pounding on the keyboard?
Some days I just get to do a little bit of more hanging out with you and talking. Sometimes I got to be more of a producer. Today I'm being more of a producer. Yeah,
it's perfectly allowed.
Just getting things organized.
Go easy on that laptop is all I'm saying. It's the most heavy-fingered guy I've ever... let me rephrase that. Heavy-handed guy I've ever had in my life on the keyboard. Is it time for Jim Rutten College Basketball?
It is time for the Weave.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Three Man Weave, where we had Matt Cox on here from Three Man Weave last week, it's Jim Root this time. How you doing, Jimmy?
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Gil. It's great to be back in college hoop season. We got the Champions Classic tonight here in Chicago, so I'll be in attendance. It's a great time of the year.
Does your mom call you James or Jimmy or Jim? What does she go with, by the way?
Is she scolding me or it's James if I'm in trouble? James Patrick, actually, if I'm in trouble. But Jim is the typical one for her.
Okay, well let's start with the Championship Classic itself tonight, the Champions Classic, which is the standard fare, right, of Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Michigan State. Do you have plays on either of those two or both of those games?
I was hoping to get Duke at -3 in the first one. I think there were some look ahead stuff, you know, last week that had Duke -2.5, especially after Michigan State had dropped that one to James Madison. I was kind of eyeing it up. But as we get to today, you see that the lines really start to permeate through the public and it's -4. So I am sitting that one out. I definitely lean towards Duke, but Coach K used to own Tom Izzo like badly, but there's a new era too. I'm not going to rely on that historical trend anymore. In the nightcap, Kansas, Kentucky, I think it might be a little more competitive than the 7 indicates. I have not bet the side yet. What I did take in that one is the over. Kentucky's roster construction is very conducive to overs right now. All three of their centers are not available. Two of them have foot injuries, and the third one, a European 7'2" guy they brought in late, is not officially eligible per the NCAA. So they're playing a lot of guards, forwards. They're spreading the floor out. They kind of got to run up and down. And Kansas is always willing to run, even with Hunter Dickinson this year. So I think that game gets a little up and down. Ping pong's back and forth. It's the nightcap. Things could get weird, wild than that. So over 147, 147.5, I think is a pretty decent bet there in the Kentucky-Kansas nightcap.
Okay, but those don't constitute your three best bets of the night. You have two sides and you have a total. Let's walk through those. What do you got first?
Yeah, absolutely. First one is 616 on the board, Indiana State. This one has been hammered up. I saw like a 13.5 opener early yesterday, and it got bet up quickly. 16 this morning, now up around 17. I still would take it at -17, maybe for slightly less than a unit. Be careful with the bet size considering it's moved so much. But these two are just in completely different classes. IUPUI last couple of years has been a bottom five team in the country. There's some excitement around them this year, but I watched their opener against Division II Spalding and they didn't look much better. They beat Valparaiso last time out. I think Valpo is like very, very awful. So I'm not too high on IUPUI. Meanwhile, Indiana State played fairly competitively with Alabama down in Tuscaloosa for a while, which is tough because Alabama can run you out with how fast they play. Indiana State's got a lot of weapons, and they get another one back tonight, Robbie Avila, a sophomore center that has not played yet this year. Towards the end of last year, he looked like a star. I think he just adds another element that's tough for IUPUI to guard. I think this one's a big-time blowout, despite being, you know, in-state competition. So I like Indiana State there, laying 17 points at home.
Okay. You have a total as well?
Yep, total as well, and I'll hit the other main board side before I get off the rails and go to the extra board.
Please.
You know I like to live on there, Gil.
I know you do.
The other main board side, 621 Northeastern. I'm seeing 4 in the market. It's kind of been bouncing around, but Northeastern +4. I love that. This is another local battle here, Northeastern Harvard. They play almost every year. Bill Cohen's been terrific against Tommy Amaker recently, covered 4 of the last 5 matchups against them. And then Harvard as a favorite is just something I'm always looking to fade. Last 5 years as a favorite, Harvard is 23-45 against the spread. So essentially like 33% shot. They don't lay points well. It's not a team that really is structured to do that. They kind of play up well athletically against better competition, but not a good favorite. And Northeastern's very feisty. I like what Bill Cohen has done so far this year. So I'm gonna ride with them as the dog. And then on that extra board total, 306, 533 on the board. Alcorn State, Arkansas State, the over. Arkansas State's just like a crazy over team. I talked about Alabama earlier. They played against Wisconsin to start the year. Arkansas State did and went way over. And it's because they hired an Alabama assistant. They brought in Brian Hodgson, a guy that has been with Nate Oates for a while. Oates very well known for high possession games, getting up and down the floor. Arkansas State's starting to do a lot of that same thing. It did in that opener against Wisconsin. I think Alcorn State will be a willing participant in that kind of track meet here. So over 152.5. I'm going with there off the extra board.
Extra board, extra games in your local sports book or your not so local sports book. By the way, that Northeastern Harvard thing reminds me. I went to school in Boston. 40 plus universities in Boston. That was the one. Not only was there a party right every weekend somewhere, but all the basketball teams played each other, and it didn't matter if you were like D1 or D3. Like, we had Reggie Lewis come over to our gym and just destroy us in the 80s, in the late 80s. Like, that's how it was back in the day. So it's always cool that they play so many games amongst each other. Let me ask you this, though. This is what I asked of Maddie, but this is primarily with you in mind, because I would think if people listen to this show and they're familiar with you, the biggest thing that leaps to mind about you is right around March Madness, you are famous for saying, oh, I've got this team at 60-1, I've got this team at 80-1, I've got this, and you always get them like super duper early. Were you on FAU last year, by the way? We were trying to determine that earlier on the show.
Sadly, I was not.
You were not.
Was one. Yeah. Like, as the year went on, I probably should have added them, having watched them. And I don't know, sat on my hands for some reason. They made the Final Four and I regretted it big time.
What did you have last year? If you could refresh our memory on that.
I'm trying to remember what number I had Miami at. I bet them like four straight years in preseason futures. And then, you know, back to back now, they've had big time runs in the postseason. I want to say I had them like 50 or 100-1 last year. And then I had San Diego State 125-1 also reached the
that
Final Four.
It.
And from there,
that was it.
Yeah. I didn't have any UConn money, but I was able to kind of finagle hedges and stuff where I thought UConn was going to win and was able to make a little money because of those other tickets.
So the point is that you pepper the board, and you were, even if you don't land on it, you're certainly hovering around. What then have you bet thus far this year? What should folks listening be thinking about betting themselves?
Well, I can plug a little article on threemanweave.com and 3-man-weave.com. I write up my futures every year. It's definitely taken on more of a portfolio approach in recent years. Peppered the board has maybe even become a light term for what I do. It's kind of ridiculous. I can't control myself, but I got like Kansas at a pretty good price, 22-1 when they got Hunter Dickinson. Purdue at 25-1 when Zach Edey came back. Michigan State at 40-1 right at the beginning of the offseason. And Duke is actually still my title pick, despite the home loss to Arizona. Some of the longer shots out there that I think are worth taking a stab at. I mean, San Diego State is still north of triple digits, 125-1. That's probably the best team in the Mountain West. Texas Tech is a team I've loved all preseason. Just a great defensive squad now with Grant McCasland and the transfers that they brought in. Offense is still a work in progress, but I think they could be hyper competitive in the Big 12. And then Florida is a team that I've really kind of been warmed up to the last couple of years. They really disappointed last year, but I think they structured the roster a lot better this year. They got more guard play. They did lose to Virginia in that neutral site showcase in Charlotte, but they're lacking Zion Pullen, one of their big time point guard transfers. He suspended the first three games. When he gets back in there, I think this team's going to look really good, and they play Florida State coming up this weekend. That could be kind of the coming out party for Florida, where people really sign up and say, all right, this team kind of has it. And, you know, they've been bet up way big time tonight. I think they opened like 28-point favorites against Florida A&M. It's like 34.5 now. So people are starting to sniff out the Gators. I think that's a pretty solid future bet as well, considering the structure of their roster and the coaching staff that they have.
Okay. So San Diego State, Florida, what was the one before San Diego State?
Texas Tech. Those are the three kind of longer shots down the board.
Yep. Okay. And the beauty of this with college basketball, again, for new-ish bettors, and I don't know if there's any science to this, but it just seems like with college basketball, and this has everything to do, though, with the fact that there's a tournament at the end, right? And we all know about March Madness and how teams bubble up and make late runs. Last year, there was no greater example than last year. And the runs of teams like Florida, like the Florida Atlantics of the world and the FAU Owls. Who was our guy from FAU on that we had?
Ken LaVica, the great Ken LaVica.
Yeah, Michigan State, obviously, San Diego State. There was a bunch of late runs in there. So because of that format, what you end up having as late as February, right? Like into like early February, you have these huge numbers on a lot of schools that are kind of live-ish. So, you know, grab some of these that the Jim is recommending, but know that you'll have some opportunities, hopefully, with some other teams moving forward as well. Real quick, then, last 45 seconds, have you learned anything macro or about a specific team that has been noteworthy in this young season so far that you think you might not have been right about, maybe a macro statement about the sport itself or just about an individual team?
I think the big macro thing is the overs. It's been kind of crazy so far this year. A big part of that is the block charge rule. Turnover rate is down, so efficiency is up, and overs are like 35 games over 500. It's kind of the opposite of what you guys were talking about with the NFL, where unders have reigned supreme. There's been a lot of scoring, a lot of efficiency so far in basketball, and I think the markets are still catching up a little bit.
All right, Jim Root, all of Three Man Weave's picks at 3MW underscore CBB. Jim, great to see you, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you having me, Gil. Good to see you, too.
James Root, when he's not behaving properly. That's what his mom says.
James Patrick.
Pete Futek on the other side. College football numbers game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada at the D. And ladies and gentlemen, his name is Pete Futek. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Futek. That's F-I-U-T-A-K. He is the founder, the emperor, the creator of collegefootballnews.com. He joins us now from the heartland. How you doing, Pete?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Doing very well. I got a couple questions for you. One, let's talk about the Heisman.
Let's go.
Let's talk about the Heisman. Yeah. We were doing a little blind resume earlier, and the blind resume points to Jaden Daniels. You're a Heisman voter. There's about a bajillion of you. And I was making the case that, hey, the Heisman voters aren't like NFL analytics voters. It's trending towards more analytics folks. And as y'all are just going to look at the win-loss column and say, Jaden Daniels and LSU has three losses, and no one will particularly care that none of that is Jaden Daniels' fault. Is that an accurate assessment? And who right now, if you could blink twice and sort of code it for us, might be your Heisman winner?
At the moment, you're dead on right, because the Heisman's a weird animal. Because remember, I fought this a couple of years ago. Remember when, like, Trevor Lawrence was out for a little while, his stats weren't that great, and yet he still got like second or third because everyone's like, oh, it goes to the best player. Well, that's the NFL draft. The best actual player that's what the draft is for, to kind of sort that thing out. My attitude's always, who is the signature guy in the college football season? Who's the combination of MVP, MOP? Who is the guy who said, yeah, that's the 2023 season? Stat-wise, if you look at the 2016 Lamar Jackson season, that's what Jaden Daniels is doing, except he's more accurate. So stat-wise, it's Daniel, because like you said, he's been brilliant, but it helps that defense is awful and he has to keep bombing away. But he also gets the benefit that people are watching him play. My continued belief that no one actually has the Pac-12 network or nobody actually watched Pac-12 games is continuing, because really it should be Penix or Nix at this point, because their teams are in the national championship mix, and Daniels' isn't. Is it Jaden's fault? No. But that's kind of part of this whole scenario here, where long-winded way of saying right now, I would say the momentum is with Daniels because he's been more spectacular and everyone watched him. Coming up, let's see what Penix does against Oregon State. Let's see what he does down against Washington State. Let's see what he does in the Pac-12 championship, especially if it's Penix versus Nix for the Pac-12 title and a spot in the college football playoffs. So right now, Penix, Nix, and Daniels would probably be in the top three in some order. There's a lot of Marvin Harrison love in there. If he rocks against Michigan and Ohio State beats Michigan because of Marvin Harrison Jr., I think he's really in that mix as well, except his stats just aren't there like a Devontae Smith's were. So that's probably it. J.J. McCarthy, no, there's going to be too many people who aren't going to vote for him because it's Michigan right now and everyone's anti-Michigan. And I don't think anybody knows who Jordan Travis is really outside of, oh, yeah, he's that guy for Florida State. So, like you said, Jaden Daniels at the moment, just because he's that hype guy. But to me, he's not the signature guy this season yet until we see how this plays out with Oregon and Washington.
All right. Well, you anticipated my Marvin Harrison question. Does he have a shot? So, okay, there's my answer.
Yeah, absolutely has a shot. Yeah, he does. If he rolls against Michigan, absolutely has a shot.
Okay. The other big thing, obviously, is who ultimately will get into the last four-team playoff. We have two more regular season weeks, and then, of course, we have conference championships. With the Ohio State-Michigan game looming, that will knock out one undefeated. So, yep. give me a few tack percentage on the chance that we will end up, that this will be the easiest thing ever for the committee, that we will end up with four undefeateds, knowing that we have Georgia, Alabama in front of us, that we have Washington having to play Oregon State here this week, as a beginner, right? Let alone a Pac-12 championship. Do you think this works out that cleanly, or do you think the committee is going to have to make a decision about a one-loss team and who's the best of those?
It always does. It always does. But here's the crazy part about this thing, and we're in a historic season right now. We have never, in the whole history of college football, the 150 blah whatever years it's been, we've never had five teams of Power Five caliber level, and you're including the Big East back in the day, and the five Power Five-ish teams at 10-0. It's never happened before. We've had a lot of 4-0, a whole lot of that. We've never had this before.
And by the way, cousin to the conversation, we also have James Madison, right, and Liberty that are also undefeated. So it's seven, not that they're in this conversation, but it's seven. Like, we've never had that before, ever.
No, we've had a bunch of those where we've had like the outlier teams, like a Tulane or somebody like that who does that. But we're talking about the team. I mean, Liberty hasn't played a Power Five team yet. James Madison played one and it struggled against it. So you're right. They're that's amazing too. But in terms of the college football playoff, those two are out of it. So in terms of the college football playoff, we've never had five. So we're already in uncharted territory here. The biggest question mark, the only, let's say it goes chalk for the most part the rest of the way. You're right. Then it's totally easy. Four undefeated Power Five conference champions, dream world. We've never had that before. It would be the best tournament ever, and all that, blah, blah, blah. So that's the easy part. The curveball here is going to be Alabama, because if Alabama wins out, let's say they win the whole thing, now you got a question mark here, because let's say we do have, let's say Florida State goes 13-0. By the way, Florida State cannot lose, or else it's in trouble in this thing. We get a Big Ten champion who's 13-0. We get a Florida State who's 13-0. And then what happens if Alabama beats Georgia? Because if that happens, Alabama would get in over Georgia. If Texas goes 12-1, it's not above the committee to say, yeah, you know, Alabama's playing better. We're putting them in and not Texas. But they can't, because Texas won at Alabama by 10. So in that scenario, you get the Big Ten champion, Florida State, you get Alabama, and you get Texas, 12-1 Texas, who gets in. However, if Georgia beats Alabama, then if Oregon beats Washington, then it's a fight. We have obvious three teams, and then the Oregon-Texas argument. And in that scenario, I think Texas is out. So if you're Texas, you want Alabama to win out right now, because you need a little bit of help in this.
Texas, which has not been playing nearly as well as Alabama down the stretch of this season. There are some folks who have some Alabama futures who are still feeling frisky with it. They really do.
They should be.
Yeah.
They should. They look, again, we've talked about this before. You know, it's coming from me. You know, I'm Mr. You know, Power Five snub. SEC is not great. We have to remember that the SEC is the last among Power Five teams against Power Five conferences against other Power Five conferences in non-conference play. So we have to kind of judge this a little bit differently. But I think the committee at the end of the day cannot take Alabama if it doesn't take Texas, who beat Bama.
Okay, what about this weekend in college football? What are your favorite bets?
Speaking of historic crazy things, we have hit something that hasn't happened in a long time. It happened a while ago, and now it's really kicking in hard. The double-digit conference home dog. It was 70% over a couple weeks span, and now, after last week, it went 3-2, defying all logic and reason. You get a couple of stompings in there, like Alabama destroyed Kentucky. And then the complete anomaly of Hawaii beats Air Force. You know, so it's kind of defying a lot of logic and reason because we're in the dog days of the finishing kick here. The double-digit home dogs, and combined with, we have not had, the reason we have all these 10-0 teams, we are way overdue for a crazy upset. We are way overdue for a 1993 Boston College over Notre Dame or something that is outside the box here. So speaking of Texas, it's not a double-digit home dog, but it's kind of not bad. I like Iowa State to cover at the very least against Texas because we are way overdue. I thought it was going to be Utah last week. Didn't happen. So take this with a little bit of grain of salt. The other double-digit home dogs, Michigan and Maryland. I don't think that's one of them, but 19's a lot to be given away right now to Michigan, who that team seems like it acted like it was a little fried at the end of that Penn State game, like a little stress, bit of stress release, and maybe Penn State's not that great. BYU. Awful. At home, though, in Provo, different animal usually against Oklahoma. 24.5 is a lot to be given away to this Sooner team. It's a tad bit flaky. Tennessee, I know this is a different team at home. They've been awful on the road. Great at home. Helps that they've played bad teams at home. But Georgia, again, waiting for a little bit of a stumble. I'm not saying Georgia's going to lose this, but 10.5 at home. If Tennessee can get that running game going at all, that's a lot of points to be given away. And the one I actually really do like, because historically, I know it doesn't matter. You can't go back by like 4 or 5 years ago. But this is the time of year when an Oregon-type team heads down to Arizona and blows it. Oregon's got to go to Arizona State, who's playing shockingly well now, and Arizona State giving away 23. I like that as well. So I love all these home dogs.
All right, Washington, Oregon State. I need a one-word answer.
Washington.
Would have been a two-word answer if it was Oregon State, but it goes Washington. So I kind of hemmed it in.
That's why I had to do it thing.
I kind of hemmed you in. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it.
Later,
Pete Futak at Pete Futak from collegefootballnews.com. We'll do our NFL power ratings on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In the NBA, the game could change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, you know DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers could score 150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VEGAS. That's code VEGAS. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beanie the Book, and by the way, there is breaking news. So shout out to Judd O'Connor, who earlier in the show asked, is the issue Josh Allen or does Ken Dorsey need to go? Well, Kelly, Ken Dorsey is gone.
See ya.
As the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. He has been relieved of his duties. Joe Brady is the interim offensive coordinator now for the Buffalo Bills. He was their quarterback's coach. You'll recall before that he was the Carolina Panthers OC and really made his fame as the passing game coordinator and wide receivers coach at LSU in the Joe Burrow year, if you will. So Joe Brady is now the interim OC. So that's the fallout. Feel a little scapegoaty to you, Kelly?
Yeah, it sure does to me.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
He's definitely part of the blame.
Yeah.
Is he the entirety of it, though? I don't really know about that.
Judd O'Connor speaking into existence. Ken Dorsey, she gone. Always Talking Ball podcast wants to let us know, because Futak was talking about the five major Power Five programs having 10 wins, that this is sort of unprecedented. Always Talking Ball podcast informs us that 50 years ago, exactly 50 years ago, 1973, was the last time we had five Power Five programs with 10 wins. and unbeaten at this point in the season. So there you go. Always appreciate the clarification. At that time, by the way, can you name the five in 1973, Kelly, that you would imagine in 1973 college football were undefeated? Think 70s college ball.
Syracuse. Alabama.
We're not basketball. Syracuse. It's Bama is correct. Syracuse. What just happened? I
was trying to think like of a. Syracuse. Those guys were earlier. Trying to think about the running backs years.
It would be exactly who you'd expect. It's Bama, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Michigan, and Penn State.
Yeah. 70s college football right there.
I might have guessed Texas, too. I might have gotten wrong on Texas. But it's the Blue Bloods in 1973. And this year, of course, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, and Washington. How you feeling about your Seminoles, by the way? You're pretty chill about it.
I was watching. I went to a Florida State bar this past weekend. I had an old college friend in town.
There's a Florida State bar? Yeah,
apparently in town square, there's some bar that had it was a Florida State watch party. It was Florida State Miami. There was
in
like,
town square?
Yeah, there was like 100 people. Sickies, burgers, and brews or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I had an old college friend there. We were watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I think every Florida State fan is just kind of waiting for them to lose at this point, it feels like. But I mean, there's some pieces that are really, really talented. Keon Coleman, I cannot wait to see in the NFL. Are you kidding me? That guy's gonna be one of the highest drafted wide receivers next year. He's outstanding.
We got a great tweet from
But I love flying under the radar. You know what I mean? Like that is nobody wants to talk about you.
10-0 under the radar.
Yeah, nobody's talking about him.
Primetime Cowboys underscore Cubs one says, I'm sorry. Am I crazy? Or does CeeDee Lamb's, that's a tribute to Kelly, or does CeeDee Lamb's historical stretch make him a candidate for most incomparable receiver in the NFC East? I see what you did there. How dare you? By the way, if
that was a season prop,
if Eric Bieniemy could get Sam Howell to look Terry McLaurin's way, that'd be thrilling, by the way. It does bring up a thing, though. It jogs what you said when we were talking about comeback player of the year. You're so right that the NBA, even though the NBA, you know, we try to define what most improved means in the NBA, that's still so much clearer.
It is. Yes.
Because if it was most improved, we wouldn't be talking about Damar Hamlin or John Metchie. Nope. And
you wouldn't get in these.
They'd have their own category, right? Yeah. Whereas most improved, we would have the Josh Dobbses of the world. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to have these uncomfortable arguments.
Yeah, like, it's completely where we're getting stats thrown in our face about cardiac.
Heart attack or cancer.
Cardiac arrest versus cancer. Oh, man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for NFL Power Rankings. Plug it in. Oh, you put a little jingle to it now. Can you do that every time?
Yeah, sure.
What was the one that I used to do?
For it, but yeah.
What was the one where I had like the little jingle? Dun, 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 dun. I can't remember what it was about.
I don't remember.
Huh.
We've had a lot of funky opens. Yeah. Some have last twice and then gone away. I mean, the Love Zone opens.
Oh, great. Pro tip. That's what we used to do. Pro tip. All right. NFL Power Rankings. They didn't change much for me this week. And again, for those wondering, like, why do you even do Power Rankings? Again, just a good guardrail for handicapping. I still got the Niners number one. And boy, did they corroborate that with a thrashing of Jacksonville on the road. So the Niners for me are number one. And by the way, Brock Purdy, I think this player is criminally underrated, and he is right hiding in plain sight, Brock Purdy. I think the Niners are the best complete football team in the NFL. They're number one. Chiefs were idle. They're number two. Ravens, despite the Browns beating them, I still have it number three. Should have won that football game. They should have won all three of their losses. I know, should have. I know, I get it. They lost them all. But man, oh man, does this team not know how to...
Did you catch that stat of like how little time they've trailed? Yes, in ball games? Yes,
because their three losses, they were way ahead in all. They shouldn't, not way ahead, but they shouldn't have lost any of them.
I think it's the third least all time amount of time trailing in a season.
And remember,
I can't believe I just said that all correctly.
Well done.
I did.
Before this week, Aaron Schatz had them as the third greatest team of all time through 9 weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that adjusts this week with DVOA. But I still have the Ravens three. The Eagles were idle. I have them at four. The Dolphins were idle. I have them at five. The Cowboys thrashed. Can I use that word again? The Giants at home. But what did that tell us? They're bullies. Six. I did keep the Bengals at seven. Some people might have a problem with that. I kept them at seven just because, honestly, I just think in a playoff situation, they're a top seven football team. I can't be convinced otherwise of that.
I agree. I think you're probably you're probably smarter with how you've approached the Bengals the past few weeks than I have, because I keep going up and down and up and down.
I just kept them in the middle. Yeah. All right. So here's, and this is what Kelly was alluding to earlier. This is where we've always had trouble, right? 8, 9, 10 has always been the difficulty. For me, the Browns become the eighth. They beat the Ravens, but not only that, they have a potentially spectacular unit on the defensive side. And if Deshaun Watson can just be, you know, an above average quarterback, I'm not even asking him to be elite, that's a good football team. I got them at number eight. Jags, there's no shame in getting crushed by the Niners, but I did drop them to nine. And then at number 10, for the second straight week, me, Mr. Anti-Lions, according to most, right? I've got the Lions in at number 10 only because, Kelly, I don't think there's a team that I can replace them with anymore. I think the Texans are bubbling under. I think the Vikings are bubbling under. I think the Seahawks are bubbling under. But, like, the Seahawks don't scare me.
Yeah.
Who am I forgetting? Chargers, who the Lions just beat by three. And some might argue, hey, you know, the Lions had extra rest. The Chargers were on short rest. But the Lions still managed to win that football game. But the Lions can't be higher than 10 to me because they can't stop anybody based on what I saw here this past week. They got to be better on defense long run. So those are my top 10. There wasn't a lot of movement. The only movement is the Browns are in and the Bills are out, because the Bills, I tried keeping you in as long as I could, but you're not in the top 10 anymore.
So that was the one. That's the one team, as far as our 10, that we have different. I didn't have the Browns in there, and I left the Bills in there, but right at number 10. Okay. You got through all yours, right?
Yes, I'm done. I have nothing else to say, sir.
Did I just cut you off on your final two teams? Real quick, the only reason I got confused on that is the Jags, right? Like, aren't they so easy to just slot on this back end of the top 10?
Yes.
And, like, not say anything about?
But I feel that way about the back end of the top 10. Like, it's you kind of have to put those teams in because they're better than what's below them and they're not as good as what's in front of them.
So here's my thing on Bills and Browns, because I think I've been pretty consistent with these two teams there's some of the hype with the Bills that I haven't just really gotten there yet, but they're still a quality team to me. I know their record now is what, 5-5?
Their
record is. But the Browns, I still have way more concerns about Deshaun Watson, and is he truly healthy? He gets another injury this week, and then you see this defense start to give up some more and more points each week. Doesn't look quite as dominant as it did early in the season. They are number 11 for me. They are number 11, but it was kind of like you were saying, really trying to make the case. This is not so much pro Buffalo Bills. It's more come up with 10 teams that you can for sure tell me are better than the Buffalo Bills. And I just don't think that I couldn't do that. So I left them number 10. It's Jags nine for me. I did drop down the Bengals. Those Bengals and Ravens results were they were shocking. Like, just to parlay them together in your mind is a shocking weekend that they both lost. I dropped them down. I don't really know what to make of this team right now. We'll see Thursday night. This is a must-win game, basically, for them Thursday night against the Ravens. Dolphins, I have a 7. Lions, 6. I do believe in that defense a little bit more, I guess, than you do, and I think that offense is very high-powered. Cowboys, 5. And then top 4, shake them up. Whatever order you want to put these in, I don't really care. But I went Chiefs, Eagles, remained there, did bump the Niners up, and then Ravens 4 for me. That's the order I would put them in. I think you can make a case for any one of these teams.
I don't think there's any massive surprises here is what we're saying. I think the only massive surprise will be, you know, the gentleman on Twitter, forgive me that I forgot your name, who jokingly said, I think it was Ray Pierce, are they going to knock the Bills down to number 3? Like, you got to get them out of there. Coming back, Survivor Talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many games on the board, there's no better time to put the VSiN experts to work for you. That's the VSiN experts. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up today. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. We were just talking off air.
when you're doing well in millions or in any handicapping contest, you can't wait to see the standings. When you're not, you couldn't care less. That Bills loss once again made it irrelevant.
Oh, it's tough.
Because it's instead of being 60%, a half game out of 60%, there's no point in getting excited about it.
Yeah, my last 2 weeks just killed me. Just killed me. Fell off a cliff. That was going so well, and then just...
This is the thing, though. It's like the three bets I had on the Megapod, they all won. But then to fill out number four and number five, it's just like, I don't know, Buffalo? Nope.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's made it the sixth game this week, right? With a walk-off field goal.
Sixth game. Six.
It's already a record.
With a walk-off field goal. Though this one tried not to be a walk-off field goal, but then there were 12 men on the field on defense. Okay, so which brings us to Survivor, which again, for those, 69 more players were ousted in Survivor last night, Circus Survivor. 69 people were on the Bills. There were also, as you may recall, 41 on the Ravens, but the most were on the Bengals this week, 422. So all in all, 544 were knocked out, which leaves 609. So 47.18% of the remaining entries were knocked out. Each of the remaining entries in Circa Survivor has a $17,034.93 intrinsic value. Good on all y'all who are in there. Joe Pita, by the way, texted me last night about Survivor. He's not in it, but he texted me.
What's up, Joe?
What's up, Joe? What's happening? So remember, this Thanksgiving, so we have this Sunday and Monday, this weekend, and then there is Thanksgiving, which is a standalone for those who are remaining in Survivor, those who are lucky enough to get through this weekend.
Who had you planned out for this week?
This, to me, was the, and again, I've been knocked out twice now, so it doesn't matter.
Right, yes. This is Gil's path from several weeks
ago. What it would have been is Detroit. I saved Detroit and Dallas for this.
For Thanksgiving.
No, for this weekend and Thanksgiving.
Okay, gotcha.
So I just left it out there. Was I going to do Detroit this week or Dallas next week? Was I going to do Dallas this week and Detroit? And by next week, I mean, I should be clear. Thanksgiving is a four-game thing, right? It's three on Thanksgiving, and it's the one Black Friday game.
Right.
So I'm talking about those two as two standalone weeks, this week and that. And so the question became, do I do both Detroit's this week, both Dallas's next week? Or do I do it in the reverse? What I did not want to do is a Detroit-Dallas split and then a Detroit-Dallas split, because then you're having to hit a four-team parlay as opposed to a two, right? So ultimately what I think I would have done, and this is based on the Thanksgiving, right?
That makes a lot of sense.
Because I would have used Miami by now.
Right.
I think what I would have done is played the Cowboys this week and then play the Lions hosting the Packers on Thanksgiving.
I bet you there's a lot of people that ended up doing that, though. I mean, that sounds like a smart strategy. When you looked at the schedule to save both those teams kind of for this week.
And wasn't then, that smart? You know, but
if you had gotten to this point, it was a smart strategy.
Right. It clearly wasn't that smart because I killed myself beforehand. But yes, that was the strategy.
If available, I'd be going Dolphins this week.
Well, so that's what Joe Pita texted me. He goes, it's interesting. And it's interesting for him because he didn't even play this year. But he said there was a Survivor strategy, a game theory play, if you will, where you could have burned Dallas this past week. So I'm sure there's some of these remaining 609 entries, those responsible for the 609 entries, were smart enough to do this. That there was a game theory play to have burned Dallas against the Giants. And of course, they crushed the Giants 49-17 in a game that wasn't even that close. And skated through that week if you had Miami left for Black Friday. Because that way, you would be on an island and you'd know where you stood. And you'd know where you stood through the three Thanksgiving games. That's that Joe Pita brain. sounded like pea brain. I said Joe Pita brain is what I meant.
Go ahead.
Yes. And then, so then, like, by the way, shout out to, I want to get this right, cause I want to give credit where credit is due on this. This is a shout out to a gentleman on Twitter who did a deeper dive on Circa Survivor. And he came up with just some of the extra stats. This is from Tony Farmer at Tony's Markets Tips. Thank you, Tony. Tony is a Benny analyst at Odds Shark, among others. But he said 609 entries left. Only 79 people have more than one entry left.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. So only 79 people have more than one entry, which means that 530 have just one left. This what was my theory? What's my theory at the beginning of the year? Multiple entries are overrated in the end. They really are, because ultimately you're going to play that last one optimally, and there's too many weeks for that not to manifest. Only 23 people have more than two entries left. This per Tony Farmer. Only 23 people have more than two entries left. 27 entries have no Thanksgiving favorites. No San Francisco, Dallas, Detroit, or Miami left.
Wow.
So those 27 entries, they're behind the eight ball. But that's good.
Week.
But that's good stuff right there for Tony. Thank you.
Thing really is amazing. Like imagine you're one of these people playing in Survivor, and then you've got you make it this far, maybe further than you even expected a little bit in your head to go. And what if you've got big Thanksgiving week plans? It's like, I'd be going nuts. Family, get out of the way. I need to watch these games. Like, I need to concentrate on this. Are you kidding me?
It's one of these things, too. Like, if you're in Survivor this late, and most of us have been in some year, we've been in it this late and beyond, and it is a complete obsession. You're right. And you try to be that family person, but like the TV's on in the background and you're like, yeah, sure, Uncle Aaron, absolutely. You're like looking around him like this.
Who turned on the parade?
By the way, the thing was who turned on this dreck? The thing with Circa Millions is kind of the same, just exponentially more, because now instead of what is it in with Survivor, I guess there's 10 more quote unquote weeks, because you have Thanksgiving in quotes, and then you have Christmas.
Right.
Which I was saving Kansas City for Christmas. No, I wasn't saving Kansas City for Christmas. I saved Philadelphia for Christmas. Right. I wouldn't have used the Eagles either. But there's still 8 more weeks, 40 more games in Circa Millions. And each one of those 40 is a bit of an obsession now, too, for anybody. Like, imagine if you're Steve Fezzik. Fezzik is in probably second place. We haven't seen the updated standings. But Steve Fezzik is in second place right now. I believe in Circa Millions. He's the first person to admit, like, if he was betting based on his handicapping, I don't want to misquote him, but I think he'd agree with this, that he'd be just like any mere mortal. But he's a contest player, and he is very cagey. He's very shrewd when it comes to contests. So he plays these in a way, and he sort of gives us insight off air. I won't share him unless he's here. But he sort of gives us insights into what he's thinking about. And a lot of it has to do with so much more of it is contest strategy than his handicap. In fact, almost all of it is his contest strategy instead of his handicap. And so even in weeks, like take a week like this, he will look at what other people picked. And then he will say this past week that went by and he will say, wow, I can't believe these people at the top picked these teams because they should have anticipated that this group of teams would have been the ones most picked, so on and so forth. That's stuff that I have talked about many times on this show, but I probably wouldn't be that locked into this early.
Right. No, that's where I was just going to say that. It's probably the difference between a me and a Steve Fezzik.
That's
you know
exactly
what I mean? I'm just
right.
trying to pick five
that's
winners.
That's why he's 7 games ahead of us.
And that's why that's he's right. 7 plus games ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. I would think about that stuff, but it wouldn't be till probably the final few weeks where I'd really start
when it
getting
became
that.
Real,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, for him, it's real already because he's in second place, so I totally get that he's doing it. But I'm certainly not in any position to do that.
So 40 games left.
40.
What do you think he's got to go to win it?
Well, I'd have to see what he is. I'm going to guess he's like a half game out. That's my guess. Let's just guess he's a half game out.
Yeah, let's say that.
What does he have to do to win it?
Let's talk about Steve like he's not listening.
Yeah,
about to text
that's
you.
Exactly right. He's still listening. So if it's 24 and 16 is 60%, right? 24 and 16 is 60%.
Is 30 enough to get home?
I think so.
I think so, too. That was a number I had in my head.
If he at his point goes 30 and 10, he's winning it. If he goes 24 and 16, he probably just misses. So it's somewhere in that pocket.
Yeah, I think
if you're in the top 100, top 100 cash, if you're in the top 100, if you go 3 and 2 the rest of the way, you probably drift into the money just by staying afloat like that.
bets you made after guessing the Lions yesterday?
The only one that I talked about two, but the only one I made was Minnesota, catching more points than exist now. And then Cleveland was the other one I liked, but like we talked about, I wasn't in any rush to bet it because we don't know about Deshaun.
I haven't bet it yet either. Same thing. I got that one circled. Missed the number on the Dolphins, had the right thought, but that one got away from me. So the only thing I bet was the Jaguars.
You didn't bet it? You loved it.
I didn't.
Oh, man. Best Bets is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.